Cars today are built to last, but how they look is up to you, and that's where Maaco comes in. They specialize in cosmetic repairs. Let's say it's affordable paint jobs to fixing those annoying dents and dings. Whatever it is, Maaco has you covered. With more Americans keeping their cars longer, now's the time to protect your investment and keep it looking sharp for years. Get started. Visit your local Maaco today. Get the free estimate and see how easy it is to bring new life to your ride. Uh-oh, better get Maaco.
Now at Menards, save big money on everything for your next project. With the largest selection of concrete and mortar in stock, we have the right mix specially formulated for your project. View our entire selection of concrete and mortar mixes online or in-store and save big money. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Hi there, my name's Andy.
And my name's Anna.
And we are two of the four hosts of the podcast No Such Thing as a Fish. We present every week the most amazing, wonderful, insane, hilarious, bizarre facts you've ever heard.
Facts like, did you know America has a national grocery bag packing competition?
Did you know, Anna, the company Volkswagen sells more sausages than it does cars?
Yes, we've got those two facts and about a billion more in our podcast archives for you to listen to. We chat about them, we laugh about them, we make the occasional terrible pun.
It's great fun. It's called No Such Thing as a Fish. Why don't you listen now?
You're listening to live courtroom coverage of the trial of Karen Reed from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
Now open, you may be seated.
All right, so Mr. Clerk, you say counsel wants to see me?
They did, Your Honor.
Okay, why don't I see counsel at sidebar? Jim. All right, so...
All right, to the court,
please. All persons have any business before the Honourable Beverly Cannoni, Justice of the Norfolk Superior Court, and for the County of Norfolk. Draw near, give your attendance, and you shall be heard. God save the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. This court is now open. You may be seated.
Okay. Good morning again, counsel. Good morning again, Ms. Reed. Good morning, James. So a couple of things. We appreciate your patience this morning. Remember I told you the other day that we're trying to cut back on sidebar conferences. So we took some time now to address issues that we would have otherwise had to do that way. So we do appreciate your patience. And also I really appreciate your patience about and understanding about yesterday. Sometimes during trials, things come up that are completely unavoidable. And I tried to cancel you as soon as we could so you wouldn't even have to come to court. So I appreciate that. I do have to ask you those questions. Were you all able to follow my instructions and refrain from discussing this case with anyone since we were last here?
Yes.
Everyone said yes or nodded affirmatively. Were you also able to follow the instructions and refrain from doing any independent research or investigation on this case?
Yes.
Everyone said yes or nodded affirmatively. Did anyone happen to see, hear, or read anything about this case since we left here the other day? Everyone said no or shook their heads. All right, can we have our next witness, please?
All right, ma'am?
Yes.
The Commonwealth seeks to introduce two clips. Okay. The first clip the Commonwealth would seek to introduce and show the jury is clip 20.
There's innuendo here that you guys have really been going at it. And this was sort of had like a last day element to it. Was that going on?
That was not going on. John made it clear to me, I'm never breaking up with you. You know, not never that we're in this good or bad, but you're the best person I've ever.
The Commonwealth would ask to show clip 19.
Okay.
I don't see how John would have known about my chats with Brian. And I'm not sure if he knew he would have reacted very strongly. I think we would have broken up, but I don't think John would have lost it and caused a fight. I didn't feel like John's emotions with me got really strong.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sure. All right, Ms. McLaughlin, who is your next witness?
Your Honor, our next witness is a juvenile by the name of Ms. Kaylee Furbush.
Okay.
Goodbye.
Begins with a history of fingerprints, biology, morphology. It progresses to supervised casework, processing techniques, evidence collection, and culminates in a competency exam for any of the disciplines that the trooper is assigned.
Now, when you're working for the crime scene services section, how are assignments made typically within that unit?
Typically, troopers work on an on-call schedule. They're given advance notice, and they're on call for 24-hour periods. Most often, if a call is received or a request is made for crime scene services during that call period, the trooper assigned responds.
And sort of geographically, as far as the on-call trooper is concerned, how is that sort of divvied up?
So I was assigned to the Maynard Laboratory. The crime scene services section is organized by crime labs. Maynard encompasses a large area, upward of 50 cities and towns. Some of the more northern towns would be Lowell and Billerica, and it goes all the way down to Canton and Stoughton. The trooper on call for that 24-hour period covers that entire region.
Now, sir, were you working with the State Police Crime Scene Services Section on February 1st, 2022?
Yes, I was.
And where were you requested to go on that day?
I was requested to respond to the Canton Police Headquarters.
And approximately what time did you arrive at the Canton Police Department?
Approximately 9 in the morning.
And who did you meet upon your arrival there?
I was met by the requesting officer, Michael Proctor.
And what was the purpose, or what was described to you initially as the purpose of you responding to that location?
The request was made for me to assist in documenting a search warrant that was being executed on a vehicle housed at the police department.
And who do you recall being present during your time at the Canton Police Department and during that search warrant execution?
Trooper Proctor was present. There was a forensic scientist from the crime lab, Maureen Hartnett. There were various members of the Canton Police Department. There were members of the State Police Crash Reconstruction Section, Trooper Joe Paul, to name one. There were members of the Norfolk SPDU as well.
And if you know, in addition to Michael Proctor, how many other members of the Norfolk SPDU were present during the search warrant?
I'm aware of at least three.
And was it, what was it that you were asked to document at that location?
Namely, it was Karen Reed's vehicle.
And where was that vehicle located within the Canton Police Department?
It was in the garage bay.
Now, can you describe for the jury the process of your documentation or memorialization of that vehicle that morning?
Yes. Typically, upon arrival, I would consult with the requesting officer to determine the scope of the search warrant. In that case, it was Michael Proctor. He described that the vehicle was being searched for a variety of things, to include biological evidence, communication devices, alcohol containers, receipts, infotainment center data, etc. He asked me to document the vehicle with digital photographs. I then consulted with the forensic scientist who was present as well to determine the order in which the vehicle would be documented and processed. I began by documenting the vehicle's exterior with photographs prior to any manipulation or movement, and then proceeded to document the interior and its contents.
Now, any items that were seized during the execution of that search warrant, how were they photographed prior to being seized?
They're photographed in place prior to being moved.
Now, what kind of instruments or tools do you use typically while photographing items for crime scene services?
The main piece of equipment we would use is a digital camera. We wear protective equipment, namely gloves and a mask typically, often a scale so that the images can be calibrated to true size upon examination later. Sometimes placards or ruler tape we placed on items of interest or items that will be collected.
Now, on this occasion, you mentioned Maureen Hartnett from the crime lab was present there as well?
That's correct, sir.
And what did you observe her doing as far as any sort of documentation with relation to certain things or items or areas of the vehicle?
My recollection is that she was chiefly concerned with the exterior of the vehicle, namely the rear right corner, and she was looking for DNA and trace evidence, I believe.
And as far as, was there any delineation that you saw her place on the vehicle with respect to certain areas of the vehicle?
Yes, she marked various locations on the vehicle with ruler tape.
And is that something that you would photograph both prior to and afterward when she would place those stickers or labels on the vehicle?
The area would be documented during my overall photographs prior to her placing any placards or ruler tape. And then once those placards are placed, they would be photographed again.
Now, in addition to the photographs, what else did you do with respect to the vehicle?
I was also asked to process the front right passenger compartment of the vehicle for friction ridge impressions.
Now, what is a friction ridge impression?
A friction ridge impression is it's a replica or an impression of the friction ridge skin on the hands or the feet. Friction ridge skin is an evolutionary adaptation on human beings that allow for better grasp of objects. What makes it unique and significant to policing is that that friction ridge skin has unique patterns. They're formed through ridges and furrows or hills and valleys, and they're unique to every individual. In the hundreds of years that fingerprints have been studied, no two individuals have ever been determined to have the same fingerprints. Analysts are trained to examine these patterns, more importantly, the individual ridge events, and conduct examinations that can lead to identifications or exclusions.
Now, just briefly, can you describe for the jury that process of how you do that?
I would document the vehicle with photographs first, and then determine what medium would be used to process the vehicle. In this case, white fingerprint powder was selected. The particular area processed was relatively small. It was the front passenger compartment, interior and exterior. I focused on surfaces that were more conducive to friction ridge impressions. Certain surfaces are far more conducive than others. Typically, non-porous surfaces like glass, polished metal, dash surfaces are better for impressions, are more likely to yield impressions than porous surfaces, which is items like paper or unfinished wood. The area was processed with white fingerprint powder, examined, and no impressions of value were determined to be present.
Now, just briefly, Trooper Clark, when you say no impressions of value were determined, can you explain to the jury a little more, expound upon what that means?
Analysts are trained to determine during the analysis phase if an impression is of value for comparison. What that means is whether or not the impression, if any, has enough quantitative and qualitative detail where it could be compared to a known impression or an exemplar and make a finding. In this case, there were no usable impressions.
Now, upon that initial documenting of the vehicle, were you asked to go anywhere else?
Yes, I was also requested to respond to 34 Fairview Road in Canton and take overall photographs of a scene.
And when you say overall photographs, can you describe to the jury what your understanding of that term is?
Overall photographs are essentially just like they sound. They're typically taken from a distance. They're not examination level photographs. They're general area photographs. This particular case, it was an outdoor scene. I was directed where to focus my attention, and I took a series of photographs of that area.
Now, did anyone go with you there?
Not that I recall.
And when you say your attention was directed to certain areas, where was your attention focused?
The requesting officer explained that upon my arrival, I would see an area in the front lawn or close to the street at that address where a significant amount of snow had been partially cleared away near a flagpole. He asked that I take overall photographs of that area, given the lighting was preferable, and to focus on the front of the residence, that cleared area, and the street around it.
And Trooper Clark, what do you recall in reference to the snow accumulation on the area of the lawn near the flagpole at 34 Fairview Road on that date of February 1st?
My recollection is that there was a significant amount of snow present. Snow banks were apparent from what I presume to be plowing. There was an area that did appear to be cleared and heavily trodden by footwear and tires. Still, even in that area, there was a significant amount of snow with certain spots of grass showing.
Now, while you were there, sir, did you or anyone else do any sort of excavation of that front lawn area?
No.
Now, following that, where did you go?
I returned to the Canton Police Department.
And why did you return to the Canton Police Department at that point?
I had finished my assignment with 34 Fairview, and I was asked to return. I believe the forensic scientist was continuing to process the vehicle. At that time, I would re-encounter her and determine if there was any additional photographs required.
Now, in addition to the photographs that you took initially at the Canton Police Department, what else did you memorialize with reference to the vehicle that day?
They took general photographs of the vehicle, the contents. At one point, a bag was presented to me with evidence by one of the Canton officers.
Let me ask it this way, sir. At some point, you mentioned there was a reconstruction trooper who was present at the Canton Police Department, correct?
That's correct.
And so what, if anything, did you document with respect to that reconstruction trooper outside of the Canton Police Department?
Trooper Joe Paul asked while I was there to document a series of brake and acceleration tests with digital video that he was performing with the same vehicle. I was also asked to take photographs and video of the vehicle's backup warning system, which was activated as they performed some tests.
Your Honor, may I approach?
Yes.
Sergeant Clark, join me with this. Do you recognize that?
Yes.
And what do you recognize that to be?
This is the crime scene photos.
And what's contained on that disc, is that a fair and accurate portrayal of what you observed both inside and outside the Canton Police Department with respect to Ms. Reed's vehicle, as well as the scene at 34 Fairview on February 1st?
I presume it is.
Your Honor, Commonwealth seek to introduce them as a nice exhibit.
I'm assuming that that's all that's on the disc, and if that's the case, then we have no objection.
You've seen it.
I haven't seen that particular disc. We have received the photos in discovery. I'm not concerned about that.
Okay. All right, that'll come in.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Exhibit 133.
May I have one moment?
Yes.
Your Honor, with the court's permission, if I could just publish a few of those photos for the jury.
Okay.
Yes. I'm sorry, Your Honor. May I approach the witness just
yes.
briefly? I'm presenting you with three photographs. Do you recognize what's depicted in each of those three photographs?
Yes, I do.
And what do you recognize depicted in each of those three photographs in general?
I would describe these as a mid-range and a close-up photograph of the vehicle's dash area.
And, Your Honor, separately, may I call to seek to introduce and admit as the next three exhibits?
All right. Well, I'd like to do it as one exhibit.
ABC?
Please, yes.
Yes,
sir. If it's 134A through 134C.
Thank you.
And my apologies, Your Honor. With the court's permission, may I now publish some of those photos?
Yes.
Thank you. Ms. Gilman, if I could have photograph 2616. And Ms. Gilman, if I could ask you to zoom in on the steering wheel just above the L for the Lexus sign. And Sergeant Clark, do you see what's depicted up on the screen?
Yes, I do.
And from this photograph, just above the steering wheel on the right-hand side, what do you observe there?
Vehicle's odometer reading.
And is that what the odometer read as far as when you took this photograph outside of the Canton Police Station on February 1st?
Yes, it is.
And Ms. Gilman, if I could have 2617. And again, Ms. Gilman, if you could just zoom in a little on the center of that photograph. And again, Sergeant, if you could describe for the jury what we're looking at in this photograph.
This is a mid-range photograph of the vehicle's display screen, the center console, with the what I would describe as the backup warning system activated as the vehicle approaches a pedestrian.
And lastly, Ms. Gilman, the next photograph, which is 2618. And again, Sergeant, what are we looking at in this photograph?
More or less the same as the last photograph, sir.
Closer up image than the prior photograph, is that correct?
That's correct.
Thank you. Ms. Gilman, you can take that down. Thank you, sir. I have nothing further for this witness, Your Honor.
All right. Ms. Gianetti?
Thank you, Honor. Good morning, Trooper.
Good morning, sir.
Your earliest involvement in this case was on February 1st of 2022?
That's correct.
You ended up, and by the way, at that time, you were a trooper assigned to the Crime Scene Services section?
That's correct.
And that was in which town in Massachusetts?
Where I was assigned, sir?
Yes.
Maynard.
Maynard, okay. About a year later, you actually joined the Norfolk CPAC unit or the Norfolk Detectives Unit, correct?
That's correct.
And when you joined the Norfolk CPAC unit, Lieutenant Brian Tully was the supervisor of that unit, was he not?
Yes, he was.
You are still with that unit, correct?
That's correct.
So you've been there for approximately 2 years, a little bit more than 2 years.
That's correct.
And so you were there when Lieutenant Tully was removed as the supervisor of that unit, correct?
That's sustained, and folks should to disregard that.
Now, if I could request an instruction.
Jurors, pay no attention to that question or answer. That is not properly before you with this witness.
Is Lieutenant Tully still the supervisor of that unit?
Yes.
I'm going to see you at sidebar for just a minute, please.
Okay, so going back to February 1st of 2022, you learned that Michael Proctor had called your unit, resulting in your involvement in this case on that date, correct?
That's right.
And Michael Proctor had requested that you go to the Canton Police Station?
That's correct.
At the time, were you aware that the Canton Police Station, or the Canton Police Department, I should say, had a conflict of interest with this investigation?
Yes.
Rephrase it.
Well, were you aware when you were called out on this case that John O'Keefe had been found mortally wounded on Brian Albert's lawn?
I was advised of that fact upon my arrival.
Okay. And you were also advised of the fact that Brian Albert's brother was a Canton police detective?
I did not know that.
All right. Still, it was the Canton Police Station and not a state police barracks where Michael Proctor instructed you to go, correct?
That's right.
Was he there before you, or did you arrive there before him?
He was there before me.
When you got there, where did you see Michael Proctor within the Canton Police Department?
Inside the garage bay.
And is that also called a sally port?
Yes.
And when you got there, was Michael Proctor the one to direct you to the Lexus SUV?
Yes.
And when you got there on February 1st, that was the first time that you laid eyes on that vehicle, correct?
Yes, it is.
There was no other investigator from the State Police Detectives Unit or the CPAC unit there with the Lexus SUV except for Michael Proctor, correct?
There were other investigators from the Norfolk District Attorney's Office present that morning.
In any case, you had no personal knowledge prior to your arrival of how long Michael Proctor had been with that SUV before you got there, correct?
That's right.
You have no personal knowledge about whether anyone was monitoring Michael Proctor while he was near the vehicle before you got there.
That's correct.
And before you got there, you had no idea how much access Michael Proctor had to that vehicle, right?
Correct.
Your assignment was to take photographs and to process the passenger's compartment in particular for fingerprints.
Correct.
And you did that.
Yes, I did.
Bless you. About a year and a half after that, on July 18th of 2023, you participated in this investigation again, did you not?
Yes, I did.
And that was because, in part, you had now joined the Norfolk CPAC unit, correct?
Correct.
And you participated in an interview of Colin Albert at the Norfolk DA's office, right?
That's right.
You knew at the time that Colin Albert was the nephew of the homeowner, Brian Albert?
Jackson.
I'll allow that. Did you know that at the time?
Could you rephrase the question?
Sure. At the time that you were called in for this interview and told that you would be participating in an interview of Colin Albert, you knew that he was Brian Albert's nephew, correct?
I was advised that prior to the interview, yes.
You conducted that interview along with Michael Proctor, correct?
Correct.
At the time, Michael Proctor was a state trooper in that unit, correct?
Yes, he was.
And you knew he was also the lead investigator on the case, correct?
He was the case officer, yes.
At the time of that interview on July 18th, before you began questioning of Colin Albert, had Michael Proctor revealed to you his connections with the Albert family?
Yes.
Sustained.
Will you approach?
Go on to the next interview and see if you can come back.
Did Michael Proctor reveal to you that he and Kevin Albert had socialized together by drinking alcohol in their cruise, in his cruiser.
Sustained injuries, I'm going to ask you to strike that question, disregard.
I need to be heard at sidebar.
I will hear you. A good time to take our morning recess. We'll see you in about 20 minutes. And Sergeant, you can just follow up.
All right, please.
All right, so I'll see counsel at sidebar.
Put us back in session, meet us.
Counsel.
Rise to the jury.
Exhibit II for ID.
II.
Thank you.
Session, please be seated.
All right, may we have Sergeant Clark, please?
Session.
Yes.
Sir, when you went with Michael Proctor to interview Colin Albert, you knew that the case originated on January 29th of 2022?
I was aware of that.
And the date that you conducted that interview was July 18th of 2023?
That's correct.
Did you ever ask Michael Proctor why he waited a year and a half to interview Colin Albert?
I did not.
Once that interview was concluded, one of the two of you had to write a report to document what Colin Albert had told you, correct?
That's correct.
And Michael Proctor, as the lead investigator, was the one to write the report, correct?
Michael Proctor wrote that report.
You did not write it?
Correct.
He chose the language to use in that report, correct?
Correct.
And you weren't standing over him while he was typing it up, correct?
Correct.
And he wrote that report to his supervisor without running every word by you, correct?
That's correct.
Did you ever review that report to check whether it was accurate?
Not before it was published.
And the only other thing I have for you, sir, is you were called to photograph evidence on February 1st, were you ever asked to go to 34 Fairview Road on February 8th to photograph and document evidence supposedly found on that day?
No, I was not.
Were you ever asked to go to 34 Fairview Road to document any evidence on February 10th?
No, I wasn't.
How about February 11th?
No, sir.
And then on February 18th, nearly 3 weeks after January 29th, did anybody contact you to ask you to come out and photograph and document evidence that was supposedly found 3 weeks later?
Ask it differently, Ms. Giannetti.
Yes. Were you called out to 34 Fairview Road on February 18th of 2022 to photograph and document anything?
February 1st was the only date I was called to 34 Fairview, sir.
So the answer to my question is no, correct?
That's correct.
Thank you, sir.
Is there any follow-up, Mr. Lally?
No redirection.
Sorry?
No redirection.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Thank you,
all set,
sir. Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, folks.
Next witness, please.
Yes, Your Honor. The Commonwealth called Evan Brent to the stand.
Okay.
Oh,
You yourself assured the evidence you gave the court and jury in the case now and here to the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
Yes.
Good morning.
Good morning.
All right, go right ahead, Mr. Lally.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Could you please state your name and spell your last name for the jury?
My name is Evan Brent, B-R-E-N-T.
And what do you do for work, sir?
I work for the Massachusetts State Police.
And how long have you been a trooper with the Massachusetts State Police?
For just under 8 years.
And in what capacity do you currently work with the State Police?
Currently, I am a sergeant and I'm assigned to the Leominster Barracks.
Now, going back to when you initially joined the State Police, did you undergo any training?
Yes, I did.
And could you please describe for the jury, generally speaking, what that training consisted of?
I went to the State Police Academy in New Braintree. I attended the 83rd Recruit Training Troop from August 2017 until January of 2018. And I learned about different topics that you would expect to learn about at an academy, such as criminal law and procedure and motor vehicle law, to name a few.
Now, when you joined the State Police, where were you initially assigned?
I was initially assigned to the Holden Barracks.
And how long were you at that barracks?
For about 3 or 4 months.
And where did you go from there?
I went to the Charlton Barracks.
And how long were you in Charlton?
For a little over a year.
And then following Charlton, where did you go from there?
I went to a unit called Crime Scene Services.
Now, what specialized training did you receive in relation to that work with the Crime Scene Services Section unit?
New members assigned to Crime Scene undergo a progressive training program that consists of completing a series of modules, each of which has assigned readings and a written test for each one. It moves on to assisting in the lab and then eventually assisting in the field. There's additional assigned readings, classroom instruction, and it concludes with a series of competency tests that must be passed before you are assigned your own casework.
Now, when you're working for the Crime Scene Services Section, how are assignments, or how are you assigned to a particular case or investigation?
As cases come in, if you're on call, you would own that case if it's your call day, if something comes into the lab or something you need to respond to.
And how long do those on-call periods typically last for?
Typically, when I was there in Maynard, it was 24 hours. So you would own a day starting at 7 in the morning, and it would go all the way until 7 the next morning.
Now, how big of an area does that particular unit, the Crime Scene Services Section, how big of an area does it cover?
The Maynard lab covers somewhere between, I think, 50 and 55 different municipalities.
Now, sir, were you working with the State Police Crime Scene Services Section on February 3rd of 2022?
Yes, I was.
And where were you requested to go on that date?
I was requested to respond to an address in Canton.
And do you recall what that address was?
It was 34 Fairview.
And approximately what time did you arrive at that location on Fairview Road?
It was about 9:45 in the morning.
And who did you meet upon your arrival there?
I met with several members of the State Police Detective Unit for Norfolk County.
And do you recall specifically who those members of the State Police Detective Unit were?
Yes, there was Lieutenant Tully, Sergeant Buchanek, Trooper Proctor, Trooper DeChico, and Trooper Moore.
And when you arrived there, what were you asked to document on that occasion?
There was a search effort digging through some snowbanks that they were looking for some items. They wanted me to document it with photography.
Now, during that search effort, were items located and recovered?
Yes.
Now, can you describe for the jury the process of item recovery that you observed there on that day?
So, once an item was excavated, I would be alerted, I would come over, I would document the item in its place, and then one of the detectives would use a gloved hand and that item would be bagged and documented on the bag.
Was that the same with respect to each item that was photographed by you and then bagged by the State Police Detective Unit?
Yes.
Now, if I could just ask you, if you could expound a little, when you say excavated, what do you mean by that? What did you see being done that day?
They were digging with shovels.
And as far as the items that were recovered, do you recall where they were in relation to the snow pile and the ground itself?
Some were on top of the snow. So there was some significant snow melt. I think that day it was raining out and it was much warmer than it was the previous 3 days. So some had been revealed by this melted snow, so they were on top. Others were under a foot and a half of snow.
Now, what kind of instruments or tools do you use in addition to your camera when you're photographing items?
So items of interest would be documented with a scale, so that way it would show how big the item is.
And why is it that you use a scale as far as photographs are concerned when it comes to certain items?
Because some of the photos, you wouldn't be able to tell how big the item is or proportionally what it looks like. So it has the scales, just a little ruler that shows exactly how big the item is.
Now, sir, upon your completion of documenting recovery of items at Fairview Road, were you asked to go anywhere else?
Yes, I was.
And where were you asked to go?
I was asked to go to an address, 1 Meadows Road.
And who went with you there?
Trooper Proctor.
And once there, what were you asked to document or memorialize at that secondary location of 1 Meadows Ave?
There was a vehicle in the driveway that he wanted me to document.
And was that a Chevrolet Traverse, is that correct?
Yes.
And were you asked to document anything else with respect to the home adjacent to that driveway?
There was a camera up above the garage that he had pointed out, so I just documented that as well.
Thank you. Your Honor, may I approach?
Yes.
You're showing you a disc. Do you recognize that?
Yes.
And what do you recognize that to be?
It's a disc of crime scene photos.
And the photos on that disc, are those the photos that you took at each of those respective locations on February 3rd, both 34 Fairview and 1 Meadows Ave?
Yes.
And what's contained on that disc in those photos, is that a fair and accurate portrayal of what you observed at each of those respective locations that day?
Yes, it is.
Your Honor, Commonwealth seek to introduce in a minute the next exhibit.
Okay. And same caveat, as long as that's all that's on that disc, we have no objection.
Okay. It's coming in.
Exhibit 135.
And Your Honor, may I approach the witness again?
Yes.
Sir, I'm handing you a series of 7 photographs. Do you recognize generally what's depicted in those 7 photographs?
Yes.
And in the first 5 of those photographs, is that essentially taking photographs as you walk around the Chevrolet Traverse in the driveway that day?
Yes, that is correct.
And the last 2 were of the garage doors at 1 Meadows Ave, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Your Honor, Commonwealth will seek to introduce in the bids as the next exhibit.
No objection. Okay.
Exhibit. And Your Honor, with the court's permission, may I publish those photographs in relatively short fashion with the jury?
Sure.
Ms. Gilman, if I could have photograph 7749. And Trooper, just briefly, what are we looking at in this photograph?
The front entrance to that address, One Meadows.
Ms. Gilman, 7752. And Trooper, same question, what are we looking at here?
That was the vehicle in question.
And if you could, Trooper, just describe sort of perspective-wise what portion of the vehicle we're looking at in this photograph.
So we're looking at an angle view of a Chevy Traverse, the back of the vehicle, and part of the driver's side.
And Ms. Gilman, 7758. And what part of the vehicle does this depict, Trooper?
The rear of the vehicle.
And Ms. Gilman, 7759. And again, Trooper, what portion of the vehicle in this photograph?
This is going to be an angle view of the rear of the vehicle and the passenger side.
And Ms. Gilman, 7769. And again, Trooper, what portion of the vehicle in this photograph?
This is the front of the vehicle.
And Ms. Gilman, 7771. Again, Trooper, what are we looking at in this photograph?
An angle view of the front of the vehicle and the driver's side.
And Ms. Gilman, if I could have 7777. And again, Trooper, what are we looking at in this photograph?
This is the driver's side rear quarter panel.
And Ms. Gilman, 7791. Now, you also took photographs of the garage doors at One Meadows Ave, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and how many garage doors did you observe there that day?
Two garage doors.
And which of the two was this?
This is going to be the right garage door.
And Ms. Gilman, if I could have 7795. And which of the two garage doors is this, Trooper?
This will be the left garage door.
Thank you very much. Ms. Gilman, thank you very much. You can take those down. Now, Trooper Brent, from your observations of those photographs and your observations personally, visually, on scene February 3rd at One Meadows Ave, what damage did you observe to the garage doors at that residence?
I did not observe any damage to them.
And again, both from your view of those photographs and your in-person visual observations of the Chevy Traverse from all angles on that date of February 3rd, what damage did you observe to that Chevy Traverse?
I observed no visible damage.
Thank you, sir. No further questions, Your Honor.
All right. Any questions, Mr. Iannetti?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
Good morning, Trooper.
Good morning, sir.
To be clear, the Chevy Traverse that you photographed at One Meadows, you did so on February 3rd of 2022, correct?
Yes, sir.
And you realized at the time that was 5 days prior to the incident in question, which was January 29th of 2022?
5 days after, not prior.
Did I say prior?
You did.
Thank you for correcting me, because you're right. You were photographing it 5 days after January 29th, correct?
Yes, sir.
And it's fair to say, sir, that your earliest involvement in the case was February 3rd of 2022, correct?
Yes, sir.
So you don't know, and you didn't know at the time, who had access to that Traverse during those 5 days, correct?
That is correct.
Now, as of February 3rd of 2022, you, I believe, testified you were part of the crime scene services section of the Massachusetts State Police, correct?
Yes, sir.
You met former Trooper Michael Proctor on February 3rd at 34 Fairview Road in Canton?
Yes, I did.
At the time, did you know you were at the home of a Boston police officer named Brian Albert?
I did not.
And February 3rd was the first and only time that you responded to 34 Fairview Road, correct?
That is correct.
With regard to anything that you saw on the lawn or on the snow that day, you have no personal knowledge as to how any of those items got there, correct?
I do not.
And 5 days after January 29th, you had no personal knowledge at the time of who had access to that front lawn during those 5 days, correct?
That is correct.
You had no information that a guard had ever been posted near that lawn?
Not that I'm aware of.
And when you got there, there was no crime scene tape, correct?
No, there was not.
There was no tent?
No.
Other than the police officers standing there on February 3rd, the lawn was open to anyone who wanted to look at it, just like any other lawn on the street, right?
I'm unaware of that. I don't know.
Now, in terms of your actions that day in documenting the scene with photographs, you did not write a report on what you saw and what you photographed, correct?
I took notes of what I saw and what I photographed.
Michael Proctor was the one to write the report in which he reported that you were the photographer on scene, correct?
I don't know what Michael Proctor did for a report, so I can't testify to that.
Okay, but you didn't write a report.
I wrote a report of what I did, showing up at the scene and taking photos and then submitting those photos to the Norfolk County Detectives Union.
You knew at the time that Michael Proctor was the lead investigator on the case, correct?
Yes, I did.
And with regard to other dates in February, on February 8th of 2022, were you asked to go back to 34 Fairview Road to document and photograph anything found on that day?
I do not believe so, no.
What about February 10th?
No.
February 11th?
Again, my only involvement was on February 3rd.
So that means that on February 18th, nearly 3 weeks after January 29th, you were not asked to go back to 34 Fairview to document or photograph anything on the lawn that day, correct?
Correct.
I have nothing further, sir. Thank you.
Any questions, Mr. Lally?
Very briefly.
Okay.
Just for clarity, Trooper Brent, you did write a report in relation to your response documentation on February 3rd, 2022, correct?
That is correct.
And you mentioned that you also took notes, is that correct?
That is correct.
And what did those notes entail?
It detailed several items that were collected, my response times, and who else was there on scene.
Now, when you were there on scene, as far as 34 Fairview on February 3rd, what did you observe as far as these, you mentioned that the weather had gotten warmer, some snow had melted. What did you observe specifically as far as the snow accumulation on that front lawn area in the area of the flagpole of 34 Fairview?
Objection beyond the
scope. Sustained.
As far as these items, again, when they were recovered, several of these items were under how much snow?
I would estimate about, there was one particular item that was about a foot and a half under the snow.
Nothing further.
Nothing on that.
All right. All right, Trooper, you are all set, sir.
Thank you.
Who is the Commonwealth's next witness?
Your Honor, the Commonwealth called Ryan Gallerani to the stand.
Okay.
Your Honor, as this witness is approaching, can I just move into evidence clips 19 and 20 that were previously played for the jury?
Yes.
Thank you.
Exhibit
137.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You saw Mr. Reed, the evidence given to the court during the case down here, truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
I do. Thank you. Good afternoon.
All right, Mr. Lally, whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon.
Could you please introduce yourself to the jury and spell your last name for the court?
Ryan Gallerani, G-A-L-L-E-R-A-N-I.
And what do you do for work, sir?
I'm currently employed as a sergeant for the Needham Police Department.
And how long in total have you been a member of the Needham Police Department?
19 years.
And how long have you held the rank of sergeant?
2 years. It'll be 2 years in July.
Now, prior to holding the rank of sergeant with the Needham Police Department, what did you do before that at the Needham Police?
I was a detective for 8 years.
Now, over the course of your work as a detective with the Needham Police Department, what training have you received in regard to collection of biological samples?
I've been certified by the Mass State Police since 2015 in collecting DNA.
Now, can you explain just briefly to the jury sort of what that process of certification entailed? Sort of, how did you become certified?
So specifically, I was certified in DNA buccal swab, which is the process of obtaining cells suitable for comparison, DNA comparison, by swabbing a person's cheek cells and gums.
And that certification that you received, is that up to date at this point?
It is.
Now, at some point on January 16th of 2024, did you have occasion to collect buccal swabs or samples in relation to this case?
I did.
And before I get to that, just briefly, as far as with your work as a Needham Police detective and or sergeant, you had no involvement with any investigation either by the Canton Police or the State Police in relation to any incident in the town of Canton, correct?
Correct.
Now, with respect to that date of January 16th, where did you go?
I went to the Norfolk County DA's office in Canton.
And who did you meet with or who did you collect samples from on that occasion?
I collected samples from Trooper Proctor and Sergeant Buchanek.
And again, briefly, can you explain to the jury the process of that collection of samples from Sergeant Buchanek and Trooper Proctor?
Mm-hmm. So I swabbed the inside of their mouths with a cotton swab. I let it air dry, put it in the kit, sealed it, and photographed it.
And then following your collection, what did you do with those collections once you had them?
I brought that back to the Needham Police Department and entered it into the evidence locker.
And as far as that collection process that you were describing, did you do that in conformity with the training and the certification that you referenced earlier?
I did.
Now, with reference to those items, at some point were you informed that those items were to be transferred or transported to a Bodie Technology Lab in Lorton, Virginia?
Yes.
And were there any specific instructions as far as shipping that you received from the lab in reference to those items?
There were.
And did you comply with those instructions as far as how those items were shipped from the Needham Police Department to the Bodie Lab in Virginia?
Yes.
I have nothing further. Thank you.
Any questions from the defense?
Very briefly, Judge. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Were you ever asked to do any buccal swabs of Chief Berkowitz of the Canton Police Department?
Action.
I'll allow that.
No.
Were you ever asked to do any buccal swabs of Detective Kevin Albert of the Canton Police Department?
No.
Were you ever asked to do any buccal swabs of Lieutenant Brian Tully of the Massachusetts State Police?
No.
Thank you. I'm looking
for anything, Mr. Lally?
No, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you very much, Sergeant. You're all set.
Thank you.
Next witness for the Commonwealth.
Commonwealth calls Maureen Hartnett.
Follow me, ma'am.
Just
tell me, sir, the evidence you gave the court and jury in the case down here, and you the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you?
Yes, I do.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
You can sit or stand wherever you're comfortable. Just please keep your voice up, okay?
Yes.
Whenever you're ready, Mr. Brennan.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Could you please introduce yourself to the jury and offer the spelling of your last name?
My name is Maureen Hartnett, H-A-R-T-N-E-T-T.
Could you tell us where you presently work?
I work at the Massachusetts State Police Crime Laboratory.
Before you began working at the Massachusetts State Police Crime Laboratory, did you receive any education, any further schooling after high school?
Yes, I did.
Could you share that with us?
I have a bachelor's degree in biology from Bridgewater State University and a master's degree in forensic science from the University of New Haven.
After you graduated with your master's, did you begin working at the crime laboratory or did you work somewhere else before?
I began working at the Massachusetts State Police Crime Laboratory.
How long have you worked at the Massachusetts State Police Crime Laboratory for?
I've worked there in total approximately 9 years.
Can you give us a basic understanding of how the crime laboratory you work at is broken down, the different departments and what you do?
There are various units within the laboratory. There is the criminalistics unit, which is the unit I work for, the DNA unit, the Office of Alcohol Testing, the Arson and Trace Unit, and each of those units is comprised of civilian workers, and there's also portions of the laboratory that are made up of sworn or troopers that work for Crime Scene Services Section as well as the Firearms Identification Section.
Would you consider your role a civilian worker or are you a Massachusetts State Police trooper?
I'm a civilian worker.
You mentioned that one of the departments that you work in is the Criminalist Unit.
The criminalistics unit.
Could you give us a little more detail about what the unit does?
In the criminalistics unit, we examine items of evidence for the possible presence of biological fluids. We conduct trace identification, damage analysis, as well as gunshot residue collections on evidence.
Do different employees do different things in that unit, or do all the employees, are they trained to conduct all of those different type of testing?
There are specific types of analysis that only certain members of the unit will conduct based on the fact that those types of analysis are not requested very often.
Is the unit broken down by level of experience? Are there different roles within the unit based on experience?
Yes, there are.
Could you explain that, how it's broken down, the structure of it for us?
Generally, a training analyst will be a forensic scientist one, which means they're in training and they're not performing any type of independent casework. Once an analyst is authorized to perform independent casework, they are then a forensic scientist two, and that above them would be their supervisors, which are forensic scientists three, and that is specific to the unit, and then as the chain of command goes up, there are additional levels as well.
Do you have a particular level that you've achieved?
Currently, I'm a forensic scientist two in the criminalistics unit and crime scene response unit.
In addition to your education and your master's degree, do you receive any specific training when you enter the unit?
Yes. Every analyst will receive generally the same training when they enter the unit. It is written in our protocol, so it is standardized, and that is completed once they enter the unit. It takes approximately 9 to 12 months to complete that training.
Is there any ongoing training involved when you work in the criminals unit?
Yes. As a part of our accreditation, we also receive ongoing education yearly.
You mentioned accreditation. Can you briefly tell the jury what that means as it relates to the unit in the lab?
Accreditation is a voluntary quality assurance program that the laboratory is a part of. And basically their role is to ensure that our protocols, our procedures, our equipment, and our personnel are held to a certain level based in the scientific community.
In your role, do you do all of your testing at the office or in the lab?
As part of the crime scene response unit, I will respond to crime scenes and I will perform some testing and collection at crime scenes as well.
How long have you been involved in the crime scene response unit?
I've been involved with the crime scene response unit the same amount of time I've been in the criminalistics unit, which is approximately a total of 9 years.
As part of crime scene response, do you actively go to an ongoing developing scene, or do you arrive somewhere after the event?
It depends on the circumstances. Oftentimes we are called out to a scene directly after an incident takes place. There are times when we also will examine additional items or additional scenes after the fact.
How many scenes have you responded to as far as crime scene response where you were the person who was in charge?
I would say approximately 300.
When you are asked to or assigned to go to a scene, a crime scene, whether it's active or whether it's later in time, do you make an assessment when you get there, or is there a plan developed before you leave your office and get to the scene?
I'm sorry, can you be more specific?
Sure. How do you decide what you're going to do before you get there?
Generally, when I arrive on scene, I get a brief description of what they think may have occurred. Of course. I will take an overall sketch and diagram of the scene, and I'll also take some notes of the scene before I perform any type of testing or collection.
When you arrive at a scene and you start engaging in an analysis and determine whether you want to do testing, are you allowed to use your own independent judgment?
Yes, I use my training and experience to determine what items I would like to test and what items I would like to collect.
Is there ever any input by whatever law enforcement team or officer is at the response scene?
Yes, there is.
You mentioned that you've been to a number of crime scene responses. I want to ask you specifically about a response on February 2nd, 2022. Do you remember that?
There's more live courtroom coverage coming up. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a second from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Hi there, my name's Andy.
And my name's Anna.
And we are two of the four hosts of the podcast No Such Thing as a Fish. We present every week the most amazing, wonderful, insane, hilarious, bizarre facts you've ever heard.
Facts like, did you know America has a national grocery bag packing competition?
Did you know, Anna, the company Volkswagen sells more sausages than it does cars?
Yes, we've got those two facts and about a billion more in our podcast archives for you to listen to. We chat about them, we laugh about them, we make the occasional terrible pun.
It's great fun. It's called No Such Thing as a Fish. Why don't you listen now?
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Confused on where to start with weight loss medication? See the lowest prices available with or without insurance for Wegovy, Zepbound, and more at TryLifeMD.com. 95% of LifeMD patients said starting their weight loss journey was simple. Listen to Tara's story after losing 42 pounds.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. I had gone from 237 to 195. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
Get your free insurance benefits check in minutes right now at TryLifeMD.com. Nearly 96% of patients said they would recommend the LifeMD program to anyone who wants to lose weight. Get started right now at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. Workplace stress is now a leading cause of declining mental health, with 61% of the global workforce feeling it more than ever. You can't escape work, but you can take small steps to take care of yourself. A walk, some sun, a favorite song. Therapy is one of those steps. Ongoing support to build resilience for whatever your day throws at you. Balance is tough. Getting help shouldn't be. Visit BetterHelp.com today to get 10% off your first month.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Hi there, my name's Andy.
And my name's Anna.
And we are two of the four hosts of the podcast No Such Thing as a Fish. We present every week the most amazing, wonderful, insane, hilarious, bizarre facts you've ever heard.
Facts like, did you know America has a national grocery bag packing competition?
Did you know, Anna, the company Volkswagen sells more sausages than it does cars?
Yes, we've got those two facts and about a billion more in our podcast archives for you to listen to. We chat about them, we laugh about them, we make the occasional terrible pun.
It's great fun. It's called No Such Thing as a Fish. Why don't you listen now?
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Hi there, my name's Andy.
And my name's Anna.
And we are two of the four hosts of the podcast No Such Thing as a Fish. We present every week the most amazing, wonderful, insane, hilarious, bizarre facts you've ever heard.
Facts like, did you know America has a national grocery bag packing competition?
Did you know, Anna, the company Volkswagen sells more sausages than it does cars?
Yes, we've got those two facts and about a billion more in our podcast archives for you to listen to. We chat about them, we laugh about them, we make the occasional terrible pun.
It's great fun. It's called No Such Thing as a Fish. Why don't you listen now?
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Hi there, my name's Andy.
And my name's Anna.
And we are two of the four hosts of the podcast No Such Thing as a Fish. We present every week the most amazing, wonderful, insane, hilarious, bizarre facts you've ever heard.
Facts like, did you know America has a national grocery bag packing competition?
Did you know, Anna, the company Volkswagen sells more sausages than it does cars?
Yes, we've got those two facts and about a billion more in our podcast archives for you to listen to. We chat about them, we laugh about them, we make the occasional terrible pun.
It's great fun. It's called No Such Thing as a Fish. Why don't you listen now?
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 million protection package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Hi there, my name's Andy.
And my name's Anna.
And we are two of the four hosts of the podcast No Such Thing as a Fish. We present every week the most amazing, wonderful, insane, hilarious, bizarre facts you've ever heard.
Facts like, did you know America has a national grocery bag packing competition?
Did you know, Anna, the company Volkswagen sells more sausages than it does cars?
Yes, we've got those two facts and about a billion more in our podcast archives for you to listen to. We chat about them, we laugh about them, we make the occasional terrible pun.
It's great fun. It's called No Such Thing as a Fish. Why don't you listen now?
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 million protection package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Hi there, my name's Andy.
And my name's Anna.
And we are two of the four hosts of the podcast No Such Thing as a Fish. We present every week the most amazing, wonderful, insane, hilarious, bizarre facts you've ever heard.
Facts like, did you know America has a national grocery bag packing competition?
Did you know, Anna, the company Volkswagen sells more sausages than it does cars?
Yes, we've got those two facts and about a billion more in our podcast archives for you to listen to. We chat about them, we laugh about them, we make the occasional terrible pun.
It's great fun. It's called No Such Thing as a Fish. Why don't you listen now?